And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and today we're going to have an interview with John Hondrich of the Toronto Star, who has written a really important piece about a man, David Himbara, of Toronto, actually now, resident Toronto. It was titled When a Dream Becomes a Nightmare. We'll also be speaking with David Himbara himself, which should be about 15 minutes after the hour. And later in the program, we're going to talk to David Heap of CanadaBoatGaza.org. But let's begin with our interview with John Hondrich, Toronto Star. Hello, Mr. Hondrich.
How are you?
Very good. Welcome to the Taylor Report. You've written a really powerful piece, in my opinion, about Mr. David Himbara. And it raises some alarms, I suppose, because there are a number of people over the years who have had bad experiences with the Kagame regime in Rwanda. How did you tell us about who Mr. Himbara is and why you have written this piece, published, by the way, on Saturday, March 14, in the Toronto Star, the World edition?
I was involved with a journalism initiative called the Rwanda Initiative for 4 to 5 years from 2005 through about 2009-10. I made 4 visits all. I worked for a month with the newspaper in the New Times in Kigali, Rwanda, and became very involved in sort of the whole Rwanda scene. The aim of this particular venture was to try and improve the level of journalism in the country. Most of the journalists were killed in the genocide of 94, so there was a real need, and the program, we sent Canadian journalists over to lecture at the university. I also sponsored 14 Rwandan journalists to come to study and to work here in North America. So I became very involved in the country. And in that process, I met David Himbara, who was then working for President Kagame, and got to know him quite well and saw what kind of person. So when I was able to write, it's sort of more of a column, a commentary. I mean, I know David Himbara well. I knew him when he was there. I saw the kind of person he was. I knew exactly what role he was playing. His brother was in charge of security for the Kagame regime. So this was a family that was very involved. And needless to say, I've seen what happened to him since.
Yeah. We're speaking to John Hondrich. He is the chairman of Torstar, the Torstar board. By the way, you had files for this story from Deborah Black as well.
She did some of the interviewing and did some of that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Himbara is, of course, at this moment, quite a proud Canadian, because that seemed to be almost a one of the things that saved him. Is my understanding he was in South Africa and under threat there.
And it was actually in Kenya. It was his Canadian passport that did, in fact, make sure that he could get away when he thought they were trying to grab him also with South Africa. Like a lot of Rwandans, and he, you know, he's a Tutsi. Mm-hmm. And so prior to the genocide, a lot of Tutsis from that area, they went to Uganda, they went to Tanzania, and some of them came over to Canada as well. In fact, they came all over. And that was when the Hutus basically were in power with Habyarimana. Mm-hmm. And he studied here, and he got his PhD in mm-hmm. political economy from Queen's University. So this is one very smart individual. And he sort of took his place and started working. But then he got very interested in the whole anti-apartheid battle in South Africa, moved to South Africa. His wife, you worked for one of the universities there, and then eventually he got the call from Kagame, who said, now it's time to come back, and why don't you work with me? And he did that for 2 separate stints, mm-hmm. Working directly for the president.
Mm-hmm. And one of these, he was, I guess, abroad and was told to come home, and he decided that he's come back to Kigali, and he decided maybe that wasn't a good idea.
The exact quote he gave me was, tell the dog to come home. One has to, in Rwanda, you don't see many dogs. A lot of them, that was sort of one of the horrible effects of the genocide and what dogs were left doing, etc. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of the greatest sign of disrespect. I mean, it's not exactly a compliment in English either, but I think the full import, and he just people in senior positions begun to get a feeling that, you know, their time is running out. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, President Kagame has shown himself to be notoriously fickle, notoriously people are in good form, and then ultimately they're no longer in good form. And the thing about Himbara is that he knew everything. He was right at the center, so he would knew all the stuff that's going on.
Yeah, kind of a dangerous job to be next to a president.
That's right. And remembering that at this time as well, that Rwanda was involved in this very problematic war in eastern Congo. A lot of the genocidaire left Rwanda and settled in the eastern part of Congo. And there's sort of been a really nasty war going on there for a long time. There have been several United Nations reports which have directly connected Kagame, et cetera, to events that are going on. It's a complicated, but he knows all about that. I mean, there's no question. He's got a lot of information.
So he has every reason to be fearful for his life. My memory is that the British authorities actually notified him about this. It wasn't something from a third party. It was the British said, you've been targeted.
There have been various reports from various groups about, I know there's also, he has connections in Rwanda. He doesn't want to compromise those. Mm-hmm. I mean, his brother has been imprisoned and he said nothing at all about that. But certainly in the world of people who follow Rwanda, and that's not large, but no. They have become aware of this idea that Rwanda sends foreign hit squads out to go to various countries and to settle scores. I mean, South Africa is probably the most blatant case, and yes. In that one, the South African government broke off relations.
Yes, we interviewed the daughter of Mr. Karagea, and she, not only was her father strangled to death there, but she actually exchanged tweets with the foreign minister, which were highly insulting, and on the day of the death of her father. Pretty shocking stuff. I want to ask you about that part of it. You were diligent about this. You called the embassy to get comment, and it was fairly... Were you surprised at the way they responded to you when you were making inquiry?
Absolutely. I mean, let's just say diplomatic people with an ounce of expertise in communication would not have responded as this chargé d'affaires did.
Yeah, he wrote to you, I don't think you should allow that in your newspaper.
Well, quite frankly...
This is John Hondrich, who is the chairman of the Torstar board. You probably don't appreciate instructions.
The reason why I included that particular part so clearly was it showed exactly how they're... And the fact that it was followed up by a tweet from John Rokihira, who was here in Toronto for quite some time. And I know John, and he keeps a very close watch over the diaspora in this city. Mm-hmm. And in the last parliamentary election, he got elected as an MP, so he's back there. Mm-hmm. But certainly, and he knows the scene here. The fact that, you know, that shortly after we contacted the Rwandan embassy, that we got this tweet from him saying, you know, hope you're not going to be like the Globe, and that was direct reference to the Geoffrey York piece.
Yeah, the quote is, do something to show the difference from Geoffrey York, a hater of Rwanda's progress.
Exactly.
Again, now that is really fairly outlandish for someone to write something like that.
I would agree. That's why I included, because I thought
I don't think you're on the payroll. I don't understand how that could happen. I mean, it's very offensive.
There is a level of defensism, and Rwanda can do no wrong, Kagame can do no wrong, that permeates through the ranks of officialdom in that country. It really is quite extraordinary. And the foreign minister, Louise Mushikiwabo, I mean, I've seen some of those tweets. She trots out those lines, and they somehow think that that's effective. I'm not sure they're fully aware of what that kind of reaction, what it reveals.
Indeed. Well, some of them are quite chilling, and that's why, you know, just that they seem to be in another kind of time situation where they think that you're contemporaneous with whatever is going on in Kigali. The rest of the world has pretty much lost its romance with the leadership there. And are asking questions. And by the way, one of the things I find about Mr. Himbara's writing, as you say, he's quite an authority. He is discussing their progress. I notice that they basically support themselves with the idea, well, we're making a lot of progress, therefore you mustn't say anything. But actually, Mr. Himbara is quite qualified to talk about their economy and seems rather critical.
Oh, he's got this PhD in political economy. He's very smart. The economy of Rwanda is not very, coffee, tea, some of the other things that mango, it's a small economy. They have a little bit of gas on the western side, Lake Kivu. But he would understand full well the mechanics and what makes things right. And, you know, I think one of the anecdotes I included when they were just talking about Kagame coming in and saying, you know, we want growth to be so and so percent, and which is just make it up and somehow you do it. So he understood the ins and outs. I mean, this is a country that give Kagame some credit that from a physical point of view, the rehabilitation of the country and the markets and the cities and the villages has been quite something. Mm-hmm. But in the process, political liberties and political freedoms have really gone downhill. When I was first there, 2005, 2006, you could go to the university I went there. I gave a lecture there. I met with students. You could have a discussion, and there could be what I would call limited commentary on the pros and cons of the government. But there was a freedom of expression. That has all disappeared. And anything now negative said against Kagame, I mean, people are too afraid to say anything like that. The atmosphere has got. So we have yet again an experience in Africa, and unfortunately we've seen it way too often, where a leader comes in with promise and you think the ability to perhaps lead their country a certain way, and yet the longer they're in power, it's amazing how political and civil liberties wither on the vine.
Yes, and generals generally are not the best people to establish human rights or run economies, I suppose. You know, I want to make sure I mention a name here. You referred to a story I had not heard about, Susan Thompson, a Colgate professor. Now, she's in the state somewhere. I guess Colgate might be New York, I'm not sure.
It is.
And her computer was attacked, as she believes, and I guess she has some evidence, but by people who didn't like her commentary.
Well, and what I reported there, this is what the FBI came and investigated the fact that the hackings at what she was doing, and they traced the hackings to the Rwandan embassy in Belgium. Now, can I say this was, I know I can't, but the FBI told her they traced it back, and that's where the hacking took place. Mm-hmm. But given other things that are going on, is this consistent with a pattern of behavior we've seen? Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Quite shocking.
It is indeed. And by the way, speaking of John Hodrich, the chairman of the Torstar board, and of course there were files for this story by Deborah Black. It was the World Weekly, the Toronto Star, March 14. I do urge everyone to read it. Just lastly, it seems to me the situation requires more light. I believe that articles such as this is helping save the lives of people, frankly. I think it is a help for Mr. Himbara, who, were he alone, he doesn't know who's around the next corner, you know.
Well, he certainly expressed that to me after, you know, that given there have been these persistent rumors of hit squads, and those rumors are out there right now. Again, I don't know the validity. Have we seen this kind of activity before? We've seen it in Sweden. We've seen it in Uganda. We've seen it in South Africa. And there was a press conference held in Montreal yesterday. Someone went public with their concerns. Certainly by airing David Himbara's story and making it well known. And this is a man, and you know, when you meet him or talk to him, very impressive, very well-meaning. And the idea that we've given this a profile, I would think the publicity that this has generated might make his life a bit more secure.
You know, I certainly think so. John Hodrich, we really appreciate the time. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.